Okay, last week we began a little series that I've entitled Music of a Spirit-Filled Christian. Music of a Spirit-Filled Christian. We're going to carry on with it there tonight, and I trust that we can learn some things that can be of help for us. As last week we learned that the desire, when a person desires to sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, that is an evidence of being Spirit-filled. We saw that in Ephesians chapter 5. And we pointed out that the spiritual music is the opposite of carnal music. And spiritual music honors the Lord. And you know, that ought to be the desire of our hearts. And so as we venture into this little series here, my prayer is that each of you will say in your heart, God, I want to know what spiritual music is. I want to sing spiritual music. I want to listen to spiritual music. I want it to honor you, and I want you to be glorified. Carnal music appeals to the flesh. Spiritual music honors the Lord. And distinguishing between that is difficult. And tonight we're going to look at that topic of distinguishing spiritual music. Because Satan is a master at transforming himself into an angel of light, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, and he is a deceiver of the people, 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13, he makes it difficult for us to distinguish spiritual music. And it is a difficult task. Some music is very easy once you've learned some basics. Very easy to say good, bad. But other music is very close. And I've got a few examples I'm going to play afterwards tonight. I can't play them during the message because I don't want them on the tape for copyright reasons. But I can share them with you that can be maybe of help. And in the weeks to come, I'll share some other examples that I think can maybe be a help to help us to be able to see some of these things. You know, not only does the devil work against us, but our sinful flesh works against us. To be truthful, there are some music that I know is not right that my flesh likes. And I don't listen to it because I know my flesh is wrong, even though my flesh likes it. And so we can't trust our flesh to be able to help us in that area. And therefore, when it comes to distinguishing between spiritual music and carnal music, we need God's wisdom. We need God's wisdom. And I want tonight to open up to Proverbs chapter 2, and I'm going to just read some verses here in Proverbs 2 as we look at this tonight. And these verses don't directly have anything to do with music, but they have everything to do with getting God's wisdom, and we need God's wisdom. Proverbs chapter 2, beginning in verse number 1, it says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee." All right, now Solomon is speaking to his son. He says, son, listen, this is what you need if you're going to gain the wisdom of God. He says, you need to hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest for her as for silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the ways of his saints. And then focus on verse number 9. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. All right, so he says here, if we get the wisdom of God, then we will be able to understand righteousness, what is right. We'll be able to understand judgment, which is making the right judgments or discernment. Equity, he says we will understand equity, what is straight or level or right. And he says we'll know every good path. We'll be able to decide between good and bad. And so we need God's help in every area of our life, but particularly we need to focus that on the subject of music, because music is a very, very key, very, very important part of our lives. And, you know, all of us know, all you have to do is just walk down to any of the shopping centers or anything where you find people around, and they all got their buds in their ears, they're all listening to something, and it's not, you know, talking to grandma on the phone most of the time. It's listening to their music. And they want that music. Music is in their ears all the time. And people live for music. And music is part of their life. And there's nothing wrong with music as long as it's music that will help us and not hurt us. And so discerning between right and wrong, and this is very important. Now this evening, I want us to give you some tools that with God's wisdom that you can use to help you distinguish between songs that are spiritual and carnal. And we're going to look at three different areas. First of all, we're going to look at the music structure, we're going to look at the music's lyrics, and we're going to look at the music's delivery. And those three areas will help us in discerning what is good and what is bad. So, first of all, as we look at the subject of the structure of music, now, distinguishing musical structure, we think about music. Music has three basic parts. All right, music's got melody, it's got harmony, and it's got rhythm. And all three of them are important for music. And all of our music that we sang tonight had all three of those. Melody, harmony, and rhythm. And it's very important we know that melody is the main tune. Right? Anytime you think of a song, you think of the tune. That's the one that is the main thing that you think of when you think of that. You know, if you heard a song and it was just sung by an alto or a bass or something like that, and they were singing it all by themselves, you think, that's a weird-sounding song. But you sing the melody, and it makes sense. Oh, yeah, that's that song. I know that song. Because the melody is the part that leads it. It's the tune that leads. Harmony is one or more notes that sound at the same time as the melody to complement it. All right, so when Melody plays a chord on the piano there, she plays the melody note and the harmony note, and together they make a nice sound together. They complement each other. They blend together and make it sound nice. And so there's the melody and the harmony. Then the rhythm. The rhythm is the movement, the timing, the beat, the pulse that regulates the music, the melody and the harmony. And you got to have a rhythm in order to be able to get the music to move, because the music has to have a proper movement to it in order for it to flow as music. And so all three of these are very important, and they're very helpful in our understanding of this. Now, natural. Each of these has a natural contribution to music. Now, melody's contribution, of course, is that naturally it leads. So the melody that leads the song. You sing, Jesus loves me, this I know. That's the melody. Now, you can't sing melody and harmony by yourself. I've never met anybody that could do that. That you'd have to have a very talented voice to be able to sing melody and harmony at the same time. But two people can sing together a duet, and one can sing the melody, one can sing the harmony, and it goes together nicely, and it blends, and it says, wow, that sounds really nice together. So the melody naturally leads. The harmony complements. The harmony complements the melody. And the rhythm is the one that keeps the pace. It keeps things going in the right order. Now, when this order is changed, it causes confusion. All right? Melody leads, harmony, and then rhythm. If you change that order around, and if harmony dominates or leads, it sounds very frustrating. If the harmony, it sounds just kind of a, it makes you feel irritated because something's wrong here. The harmony is dominating instead of the melody. And if the rhythm dominates, the sound is agitating. And that is where we're going to see here. Melody and harmony are fairly innocent. They work together pretty well. And most songs that have melody and harmony, you can hear it, and there's nothing wrong with that, and they seldom go wrong. But the rhythm is where often the trouble comes in, when the rhythm is off. And there's two main types of rhythm. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about some musical terms here tonight, and I know maybe some of it, I'll try to make it simple, because I wouldn't really call myself a musician. I know how to sing. I can carry a tune. I used to be able to play a trombone. I took 2 years of piano lessons, but quit. I should have kept going. But so I know a little bit about music, but I certainly wouldn't call myself a musician. But so you don't have to have a brilliant mind on these things to catch this. Non-carnal, straight, natural rhythm is the first we're going to look at here. It's a rhythm that emphasizes the natural beat of the song. The natural beat of the song. Now, both secular and sacred music have rhythm to them. And the rhythm should be organized, balanced, and clean in order to follow a straight rhythm. It needs to be organized, balanced, and clean. For example, in a march, you know, you may have a Stars and Stripes Forever march or just a march. Those are often in 2-2 time, which means that in 2-2 time, the first beat gets the beat every time. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, and it just makes you feel like marching when you get one of those songs going. Nothing wrong with that. That is a natural beat. Another natural beat in many of our songs have this, and I'll just pick out one here to just show you an example of 3-4 time. 3-4 time emphasizes the first beat of the three. All right? For example, to God be the glory. To God be the glory, great things He hath done. Yeah. And so it's a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. That's a very natural beat. It's a very pleasant. It's organized. It's clean. And another one in 4-4 time, when we sing a song that is 4-4 time, isn't the love of Jesus is in 4-4 time. Isn't the love of Jesus something wonderful, wonderful, wonderful? Oh, isn't the love of Jesus something wonderful, wonderful it is to me? So it emphasizes the first beat of the four. Sometimes the third beat gets a little bit stronger, but the second and fourth beats are not emphasized. All right, so that is, all these are examples of a straight beat that is calm, it's clean, it's organized, and it's a good way of singing. Now, the carnal backbeat is sometimes called the offbeat rhythm. Now, the offbeat rhythm in a 4-4 time would not emphasize the first beat like a straight beat does, but it emphasizes the second and the fourth beat. So, it, you know, when the music goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even do it very good. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And it emphasizes the second and the fourth beat. And that is the kind of music that has that backbeat to it. And it doesn't matter whether it's in 3-4 time or 4-4 time, whatever it is like that. Usually that offbeat is beat with a drum or with a bass guitar to emphasize that offbeat. And this offbeat, the reason that that is not good is because it's rebellious to the music. And any musician that is trained in proper music will say, yes, there's no question about that. It's a rebellion to the natural beat. The natural beat is on the first beat or the third beat, not on the second or the fourth. And when you emphasize those offbeats, it gives rebellious beat to that appeals to our flesh. And almost every song you hear that is an offbeat or carnal beat song does this. It emphasizes the second and the fourth beat. You listen to, and I'll give you some examples at the end. You listen to it, you can hear it very clearly, and we've all heard it lots of times, maybe just didn't know what you were hearing. But it emphasizes those wrong beats. Now, there's nothing wrong with a regular guitar, as long as it's played carefully. But it's very easy for even playing a guitar for people to do the back strumming and to emphasize the offbeat on the strum of the beat. And I can't play guitar, but I can listen to that. I can tell, yes. Or so when they're playing, if they're just strumming it normally in a normal calm in one direction, but when they start giving the offbeat too, then you get the same response that you would get if you had a bass guitar or a drum hitting that offbeat. And it's that's what we need to watch for. Now, a quotation from a guy named John Blanchard in this book called "We Can Rock." Can we rock the gospel? He said there, this distinctive backbeat rhythm style emerged in the late 1940s in rhythm and blues recordings and is the backbone of rock and roll music used today in virtually all pop music. And you hear that everywhere you go. I mean, you can be even driving down the road and some guy pulls up beside you and he's got something and you can't hear a thing he's got playing in the car, but you hear the boom, 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 boom. You hear that backbeat pounding away. And it wrecks their ears and everything else, but that's their problem. But now, so we have the two kinds of music here. So we see that, first of all, that the natural beat is the first beat, emphasized a little bit on the third beat, on some songs. But the first beat is a natural beat. That's what's natural. That sounds natural. That is natural to our heartbeat. And it's natural to music itself. And all the in the olden days, when you know the classics and the songs of Beethoven and Bach and all of those classical musics that were all written in straight music. It wasn't the backbeat music at all. It was the straight music that was written there. Now, non-carnal straight rhythm speaks to the spirit. But carnal backbeat rhythm appeals to the flesh. That's the thing we need to understand. And sometimes we don't even sense what it is, but we know, I just like that song. And you know, one of the things that I have found is that the carnal songs, that backbeat is so addictive that once you get it into your head, you just can't get it out. It just doesn't want to leave. Even if it's a song you just don't want to listen to because you know it's a rotten song, you can't get it out of your head because it just keeps pounding around. And the devil uses that to pour that into our hearts. Now, on the other hand, so the non-carnal straight rhythm may stir you to march or to tap your toe, and that's not essential. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, in high school, I played in a marching band. We would play marches, and we're marching down the street and playing our horns, and as we're marching down the street, and it was, you know, the drummer would be beating on the beat because we had to march. And our director was very strict with us. He wanted us to have straight lines, and he wanted our feet to go up and down at the same time. And it was very, very strict with us. But it was not hard because the drummer was beating on the beat every time, so you knew exactly when to put your foot down. And it was just march-type beat. And there's nothing wrong with that. That does not, it's not a rebellious beat. It's a natural beat. However, the carnal or backbeat rhythm will stir us to jig and twist and dance and sway. And that's what is wrong. There are sensual movements to that that get us to move in our bodies like that. And any music that moves your body like that, and naturally, this is not something you have to necessarily learn even. You take little children and you just put them in a room and turn on that kind of a music, and they will naturally start dancing to that in that jiggy way. Because that is part of the rebellion in our spirits that naturally does that. And our flesh likes that sensual movement. And we ask ourselves, well, why? Well, it's because the backbeat rebels against the natural rhythm. It's a rebellious beat. And it's that rebellious beat that stirs us. Now, backbeat is wrong even when it is very subtle because it feeds the flesh. And there are sometimes, some of the songs, there's a couple of the songs I'll be playing at the end here tonight, the backbeat is very subtle. You have to really listen carefully to pick it up. And sometimes it may be almost non-existent in part of the song, but you listen to the whole song and it increases as it goes. A lot of songs are like that. They start out somewhat mild, and by the time they get to the end, they're really going at it. And so you can't just judge it by the first part of it. But even if it's very subtle, it still affects us the wrong way. And if the music encourages your body, especially your torso, the main structure of your body, to jig and dance back and forth, that music is improper. That hip swaying, body jerking movement is carnal, not spiritual. And so that's why, you know, we need to be very careful about that. It is so common today that people see nothing wrong with it at all. Even a lot of Christians don't see that, but this idea of dancing like that back and forth, that is rebellious music that is doing that to us. It is not godly music that does that to us. Now, you say, well, they talked about dancing in the Bible. You know, it's an interesting thing. I told my wife that she ought to teach a Sunday school lesson on dancing in the Bible. Dancing in the Bible, you look up the word dance, and almost always it means to twirl. To twirl around. To twirl and rejoice. And they were joying and leaping for joy. And David was leaping for joy and as he followed the Ark of the Covenant as he was coming into Israel. And that was dancing in Bible days. Miriam led dances in the Bible. The ladies were all out there dancing for joy and leaping and twirling. And again, it's the word twirl. There are a couple of times in the Bible where you find immoral dances. For example, Herod's, it wasn't his daughter-in-law, but the Herodias' daughter. She was dancing in an immoral way. and lustful way, and it stirred him in wrong passions, and he made promises that he shouldn't have made and ended up killing John the Baptist over it. So there are a couple of examples in the Bible of that kind of dancing, but most of the dancing, you look it up, most of the time it talks about whirling and spinning and twirling as it deals with that. So that is not, the music they were singing was not music that was jigging them and making them jig back and forth in a way that was sensual. Because you watch, well, maybe you shouldn't watch, but you, if you watch a person, especially when men watch women jigging around like that, it is a sensual thing. It is provocative. It is drawing their attention to them in a sexual wrong way, and that is not right. So we need to be very, very careful about that. Now I want to read a couple of quotes from this book that to emphasize what I've just said here. These are quotes by, and there's a whole page and a half of quotes. They're all quotes from rock performers. These are not Christians. This is not CCM. This is the rock guys. One of them from back in my teenage days was a guy named Gene Simpson from the rock group Kiss. He said, "That's not, that's what rock is all about. Sex with a 100 megaton bomb, the beat." Well, that's what he said. Frank Zappa was another rock singer back in those days. He said, "Rock music is sex. The big beat matches the body rhythms." I mean, they don't make any bones about it, the secular people. They just tell you, you know, it's the beat is what gets you to swing, and the beat is what is sexual, and the beat is what we're trying to get you to respond to. So, the first way that we can evaluate music is to look at the structure. Second way we evaluate music is look at the lyrics. The lyrics are the words. What does it say? The words portray a message of the song. And the words may praise God or they may curse God. They may be virtuous or they may be a vice. They may be bad or they may be good. They may be shallow or full of meaning. They may be doctrinally wrong or they may be biblical. They may be degrading or edifying. They may be religious or rebellious. They may be filthy or clean, godly or blasphemous. There's so many kinds of words that could be involved in a song. And because the words of the music embed in our minds, it is very important that we don't justify the song because we don't necessarily understand all the words. We need to be very careful about that because the words will embed in your heart. And, you know, the Satan uses music to help you to memorize things that you shouldn't be thinking about. And the music of our day, especially when you go to the shops, you hear that kind of stuff playing over the speakers and things. Much of that is filthy music, full of all kinds of ungodly things that does not please the Lord. And we need to be very careful about that. And God tells us that the content of our heart will affect our actions. So what we allow into our heart is going to affect our actions. And we read there in Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. We need to guard our heart. And the words that we sing also reveal the content of our heart. Luke 6:45 says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And so the things that go in are going to come out. So we need to be very careful what we allow to go in. We need to ask ourselves, what are the words saying? What are the words saying? Some of the so-called Christian songs that are CCM. CCM stands for Contemporary Christian Music, CCM. So there's a lot of CCM music being played in churches today. Churches all over our city today would have been playing that kind of music, a lot of it. And that kind of music, some of the words may be very good words. They do have some good words in their songs. There's other songs that are not good words. The words are heretical. They're not even doctrinally sound. They may be all about me, not about God. A lot of other songs are songs that they put in dual meanings to it. It sounds like a love song sung to their boyfriend or their girlfriend, and yet they're saying that, well, yeah, this is what I'm singing to Jesus. Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds to me like you're singing to your boyfriend. And so there's a lot of things like that you got to watch for. And you got to think, what are these words? And what are they words that are pleasing to God, or are they words that are pleasing to me and are going to hurt me and displease God? And if it's pleasing to God, then we need to think, are they matching up to God's standards? Are they doing what God wants? Even if the song is not a Christian song, it should not contradict God's standards. All right? So the patriotic songs, you can sing the national anthem of the nation. Nothing wrong with singing that song because it's not got immoral words in it. It's got not got ungodly words in it. It's songs of patriotism and encouraging people to be patriotic to the nation. Things of that nature. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's a lot of secular, like Beethoven or Bach, the classical music. Sorry, I couldn't think of that word, classical. A lot of the classical songs don't have words to them, or at least we don't know any of the words to them, but they're just peaceful songs played on a straight rhythm, and they're pleasant to listen to. But, you know, we need to be very careful what we listen to. Wrong doctrine will hurt us. Titus chapter 2 and verse number 1 says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." Colossians 3:16 also alludes to the words of our songs. Also, in Ephesians 4:29, it says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." So we need to be careful not to sing songs that would be corrupt in their words. The lyrics must also match the sound. You know, if they're singing a song that's rebellious with rebellious words to a soft, gentle tune, that doesn't go together. Or you turn that around and you have a nice, a gentle tune with the, I said that backwards here. Or you could have a mournful song that doesn't fit with a lively march. I mean, when you go to a funeral, they generally don't play a march at a funeral. They would play something slow and calm and comforting and trying to calm people, not a march that stirs you up to march. And so they need to match what they're saying. And many times in the CCM music, the contemporary Christian music, many times the message doesn't match the words. They'll be singing songs that are about the Lord and about praising God, but yet in singing with rebellious music, and the two of them are fighting together, and it doesn't go together. So we need to be careful about that. Both the message and the lyrics and the sound must go together. They must be in agreement in order to be in harmony. And so we need to watch that and guard that. Now, the last thing here I want us to see is that we need to distinguish musical, our spiritual music by its delivery. By delivery, I'm talking about the presentation. When somebody's performing or singing the song, the singing style is the first thing we need to consider. Singing a straight, natural form draws no attention to the singer. You know, if I was to stand up here and sing "Jesus Loves Me," just as we normally would sing "Jesus Loves Me," that doesn't draw any attention to me, unless I'm really making a blubber of it. All right? But it draws attention to the Lord, just singing a straight song like that. And it focuses on the song, if it's a spiritual song, it focuses on the Lord. And the attention is pointed to the Lord, not to the singer. This style is not a sensual style. But you take straight songs, the carnal songs, the backbeat songs, and what happens there, there's many times there's things that they use in their voice that draws your attention to them. There's, now this is where it gets a little bit technical, and I don't want to lose you here, but it's very important we understand this. They use techniques like what is called scooping or sliding, where they're, instead of just hitting on a note, they'll go up on the note or they'll down on the note and do that to draw attention, and it makes it more of a sleazy, sexy type of a sound to it. Many times there's showiness or breathiness when they're singing, when they start talking like breathing and soft, and it's like they're talking right in your ear, and they get their microphone up there, and it's a very sensual type of a thing when they're singing in the mic, and it's that kind of thing. All those things draw attention to the singer and away from God. And they are often accompanied by a backbeat. The delivery is more sensual, and it draws attention to the singer. Now, the singer, when they sing up there close to the mic like that, and there's a sense of intimacy. You know, when they're right there, just really close to it, and they talk that real soft, almost like they're whispering in their ear of their boyfriend. That type of a thing. That is very sensual in its appeal. And these styles are very common, very common. And you'll see that in the examples I'm going to play in just a few moments. Now, another thing we need to watch is the atmosphere. You know, in a non-carnal, straight music, it doesn't need any unnatural atmosphere. We can stand up in a regular, normal service and sing a song that honors the Lord. It's not about me. It's not about drawing attention to me. It's not about, you know, dancing. It's about the Lord and about giving glory to Him. We don't need any neon lights, and we don't need things flashing in the dark atmosphere and all those things that they put in there. Just a normal atmosphere is all that is needed to bring glory and honor to God. And it's a reverent, respectful, Christ-centered atmosphere that harmonizes with the godly music. And that is good. There's nothing wrong with that. That is excellent. Now, when the atmosphere is dark and dazzling and flashing, eerie, and nightclub-type atmosphere, it's sensual and sometimes even demonic. And we need to be aware of that and watch out for that. This is very typical of the rock concerts and, you know, the nightclubs and things like that. And yet many Christian groups are patterning their music after that. You know, you go into their church buildings, and I was in a church building a number of years ago, and I don't even remember who it was now, but it was a charismatic type church. The whole auditorium was painted black. Completely black, the whole auditorium, and they had lights everywhere. And it was obvious that when they had their performance, that it was all about, we're turning the lights on and turning on the strobe lights, and it was a nightclub type of an atmosphere in there for their musical singing time. And I wasn't there for the music. I just saw the building as it was when it was unoccupied. But we need to be very careful about that. That's not a sign of spiritual music. That's a sign of carnal music. One other way that we can observe and distinguish between the carnal music and the spiritual music is the musician's appearance and actions. The appearance of a musician singing to the Lord for His glory will be neat and modest, and his or her actions will be non-showy, humble, modest, and seeking the glory of the Lord. Nothing to draw attention to themselves, nothing to make themselves showy, not carrying on like some of them do and making a big appeal and moving back. You know, it's just singing to the Lord. You don't need to do all that stuff to just bring glory to the Lord. And then when we see the other side of the carnal music, their actions will often be showy, immodest, in their dress, sensual, provocative, and even devilish in some of the things that they do. You see some of the pictures of some of these so-called CCM groups, you can't tell them from the devilish groups. They're just, it's terrible. And, you know, the way that they dress with the short skirts and the tight clothing and the low necklines and other immodest styles and worldly hairstyles and gaudy jewelry and a sensuous, crude, effeminate, or wild, or demonic look appearance, all of these things point to a carnal music that we want to stay away from. And the musician's appearance is not accidental. It is not accidental. That is absolutely intentional. They dress that way to get attention to themselves, to be able to promote what they're trying to promote in their self-ambition. So we need to be very careful about that. No godly Christian should desire to mimic the world like this. We should not desire that. Now, we need God's wisdom to distinguish spiritual music. It's not easy. It's not easy. And with God's wisdom, we must evaluate music structure, you know, the straight beat or the backbeat. We need to evaluate the lyrics, whether they're true or false, or right or wrong. We need to evaluate the delivery, whether it's a natural or a breathy or intimate or sensual or wholesome or a nightclub atmosphere or modest or God-honoring or immodest or sensual or showy. You know, all these different things, we need to take that into consideration. And sometimes Christians, I know this, and I need to say this clearly. There are a lot of good Christians that have an intention of doing wrong. But they have played into this unawarely, unknowingly, and started singing in their churches songs that are breathy, and a little bit, you know, sensual sounding, and they're not doing it to be bad, but they don't know any different. But it doesn't make it right. And so we need to learn what is right so we can know what God would have us to do. Two of the big name music publishers that are being used in Christian churches and Baptist churches, sadly, today, is Hillsong and Bethel. Perhaps you've heard of those two, Hillsong and Bethel. Both of those churches are unbiblical churches. They're, you know, the things that they teach, the things that they do are not biblical, and their music is not good music, even though some of the music is somewhat mild, but then other parts of the music is extremely wild. And so we need to be careful about all of these things.